Rendez-vous de la Francophonie is an annual celebration that promotes the French language, heritage, and its numerous cultural expressions. It runs March 2nd to 22nd, 2017 in communities across Canada. The RVF series, which showcases the diversity, duality, and dynamism of Canada's Francophone communities, is brought to you by La Fondation Canadienne pour le Dialogue des Cultures, the National Campus and Community Radio Association, Canadian Heritage, and this station. Please stay tuned for the next half hour for this week's edition of Rendez-vous de la Francophonie. Visit ncra.ca/RVF for more information on the series.
Hello, salut and tanse. My name is Olivia Marie Goloski, and I'm recording to you from the CGSW 90.9 FM in conjunction with Voice of the Shuswap and the NCRA, so I'd like to thank all of those organizations for allowing me to produce this content. I am a proud member of the Métis Nation of Alberta. People often ask me, what does that mean, Métis? So there are a couple of definitions you can go by. The Métis National Council, which is the national governing body of all Métis nations within Canada. And according to their website, the Métis are included as one of the Aboriginal peoples of Canada under Section 35 of the Constitution Act 1982, which reads, "The existing Aboriginal and treaty rights of the Aboriginal peoples of Canada are hereby recognized and affirmed. In this act, the Aboriginal peoples of Canada includes the Indian, Inuit, and Métis peoples of Canada. The Métis emerged as a distinct people or nation in the historic Northwest during the course of the 18th and 19th centuries. This area is known as the historic Métis Nation homeland, which includes the three prairie provinces and extends into Ontario, British Columbia, and the Northwest Territories." In 2003, the Supreme Court of Canada confirmed that Métis are a rights-bearing Aboriginal people. Its judgment in R versus Powley set out the components of a Métis definition for the purpose of claiming Aboriginal rights under Section 35 of the Constitution Act 1982. These are self-identification as a member of a Métis community, ancestral connection to the historic Métis community whose practices ground the right in question, and acceptance by the modern community with continuity to the historic Métis community. Understanding what all this legalese means is definitely a lot harder and not as accessible to most people, especially if you don't have a background in law. Knowing what it means to be Métis and how that affects you as a person and how it affects me as a person.
Well, it's interesting because I kind of take issue, like obviously I'm proudly Métis, but it's interesting to me that the government of Canada, if you have First Nations heritage, but also European heritage, regardless of what it is, you're like, for lack of a better term, you're slapped with the brand of Métis. I'm not saying it's a bad thing, but like people automatically think, oh, French. It's like, I have no French heritage in my family. It's like Dutch and then like a mix of United Kingdom and then Cree, right?
Although the word Métis is a French word meaning half, many people who identify as Métis exist outside of French heritage and ancestry. Within my status, I am Romanian and Cree. Does that exclude me from understanding what it means to be Métis? I don't think it does. There is a larger conversation of what it means to be Métis. Those of us who were born outside of Manitoba and have mixed ancestry that is not French and Cree, are we only considered Métis if we have an official status card? What do Métis people look like?
But that's a really interesting point, though, about like the visibility of Métis people as well, right? So, For problematic reasons on their own, a lot of First Nations people have a huge visibility just because like regalia is beautiful and colorful, right?
Yeah,
and
yeah.
And a lot of times, like that sort of somebody being brought in to dance at a beginning, right? Or like someone's gonna drum, right? Like that sort of beadwork as like we checked off a box, right?
Yeah.
That's super visible in a way that I think a lot of Métis culture is not, right? And so it's a little bit harder for many people to kind of pin down what actual Métis culture is, right? And so I feel like a lot of people would be like, well, Louis Riel and sashes,
yeah,
and
like
yeah.
That's kind of where it stops.
Yeah, and so then beyond that, I think there's a real lack of knowledge about like what else is there, right? Like
existing as a Métis person in a contemporary context feels like living in this murky gray area. We exist beyond the idea of only a Cree and French blending. We are more than the historic photos of Louis Riel and Gabrielle Dumont. There are so many misconceptions as to who we are as a people. So how do we as Métis people express our identity in a world where the majority of others don't even know we exist? How do Métis people find connection to community and to culture?
Yeah, I was always pulled to the natural environment. I felt a really intense connection to being outside among the trees and the insects and the animals. And I felt this very high sensitivity whenever I was outside. Mm-hmm. And I didn't really know how to understand what this connection was. I didn't really have the words or the concepts or anything like that. And when I grew up and I started exploring my Indigenous roots, I really realized that the spiritual connection is rooted in my Indigenous heritage. I feel the connection with a place so intensely. And I keep this really close whenever I teach environmental education. And it's definitely a driving force in my desires to teach students through a holistic lens, a holistic ecological lens of, how we're all in relation. We're not just individual parts operating unto ourselves. We're in relation to everything else around us. And whenever we create or whenever we support diversity of an ecological space and we live in balance with that space, then it can truly be sustaining.
My grandmother lived on a reserve when she was a kid, and she would be wearing moccasins to school, wearing the black shoes at school that she said were really uncomfortable, and then getting to wear moccasins home again. And I kind of laughed at that a little bit because, I mean, it's not really a residential school story, right? But it kind of touches on that a little bit.
Mm-hmm.
There's kind of that element of being kind of forced to be something you're not. And I think that almost sums up some the Métis existence in Canada and a lot of rural places, right? I mean, you have this going back and forth between two different worlds, right? And
mm-hmm.
those kind of family histories are kind of what make us who we are.
Over the span of a few months, I was able to connect with four other Métis people across Canada and talk with them about their history and identity and the larger Métis diaspora. Jessie Loyer is a Métis librarian and associate professor at Mount Royal University. Here is our conversation.
Yeah, it's an interesting balance to strike. And I think that when I started to be a librarian, I actually was in a really good space. I did my library degree at UBC in Vancouver. And it's the only First Nations library in an academic library that's there, the Huiwa Library. So that was super helpful for me actually to think through some of those ideas around like holding knowledge and how messed up that can be and who has access, and also kind of working in a library, dealing with the way that you have histories and histories of Indigenous, including Métis, knowledge that has in most cases been talked about in an academic way by non-Indigenous people.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And so even the stuff, so part of my job is also to get some community resources in there. So, you know, like somebody has been doing like a Métis class and they created like a, you know, like a class book, a workbook, mm-hmm. and then that can go in, like that's part of my collection development side.
Yeah,
of it.
Yeah.
So it's not only like kind of having a, teaching people to have a critical eye about what's in there, but it's also how do you get more Indigenous stuff
totally
written by people from those communities, yeah, actually available.
And I even think of like that idea, like, well, if people hear the word Métis and because it is a French word, yeah, they automatically like assume that it's like has to be half French, and the common misconception that I've been coming across is Cree, like, yeah, it is only Cree and French, when there is like a whole,
yeah,
other like diaspora of like what actually constitutes as Métis. And I guess especially when you're talking like large M Métis, like what, right, the government, yeah, like has handed down to us. Yeah. So
yeah, yeah, it's super interesting to me to kind of think through that. Yeah. I mean, it's an interesting thing to see sort of like, oh, Bonhomme wears a sash, right?
Mm-hmm.
And so seeing those things that you, I think, when you grow, like I grew up here in Alberta, seeing those things that you like immediately identify as being very Métis things,
mm-hmm,
being like, whoa, this has like some interesting connections to other places, right? And the way that those are connected through and they, mm-hmm, look differently in Quebec. And there's almost this sort of blending, I think, in Quebec of like almost that the fur trade aesthetic, mm-hmm. right?
Yeah, 100%.
And I think one of the things that, Métis people struggle with sometimes is that fur trade aesthetic is when, like, Métis nationalism is at its highest, right? Is at its strongest, right? People have power, they have money, they're, like,
trading.
They're working yeah. through things. Yeah, they're kind of connecting a lot of people. So I think when people think through Métis culture, sometimes it becomes, like, this hearkening back to a traditional, like, in quotes, life, mm-hmm. which is, like, super rooted in the fur trade, which isn't false. Like, that is, like, a huge part of where, like, Métis identity comes from.
Yeah.
But it totally disregards, like, contemporary Métis life. I mean, French culture has so many resonances with it, mm-hmm. right? Like, there's so many connections, and that's true of lots of things, right? There, you can talk about cultural similarities.
Yeah.
Without kind of conflating the two.
Yeah, right? Yeah, yeah.
So totally. The sash is kind of rooted in similar places, but then mm-hmm. it has different histories.
Totally.
And those histories become really distinct, and that recognition of, like, that separation of yeah. where we're starting to kind of cleave into a Métis identity it's not very coherent for yeah. lots of people. Yeah, so, I mean, obviously there's lots of kind of a numbers game, right? When we're mm-hmm. talking about Métis, it's the language that borrows from French and Cree, right? Yeah. And it becomes its own distinct thing. So for many people, that is, like, where the story ends, right? There's this blending of Cree and French, and that creates the Métis.
Yeah.
But it is obviously more complicated than that, right? And there is so many different histories kind of coming from different people who are still part of this community, mm-hmm. right? So, like, are still part of a community that is taking its ceremony and culture from these two places and building it into something completely different. Yeah.
Dell is a musician and a peace officer at the Foothills Hospital. Born and raised in Calgary, Alberta, Dell and I spoke about being white passing Métis and the distance it's created within us from our culture.
How do you, like, identify and how do you express your identity when it's something that, like, is decided by a different person?
Yeah, yeah.
Which is very weird.
Well, totally. Like, I've never, like, living out in Alberta, I wouldn't say, I don't know if that's, like, an excuse or whatever, but mm-hmm. I've never been fully immersed in specifically Métis culture.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I have a lot of family that live in BC, I can't pronounce the name of the reserve, but they all live on this reserve there.
Mm-hmm.
And I remember we got to go and tan hides with the women there, and they taught us, like, the traditional ways of doing it. And holy crap, it's such a process. So, like, I get these little tastes of, like, here and there, bits and pieces. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
I haven't ever had, like, a full immersion into me being Métis, like, you know, that definition mm-hmm. of French and Native American. I just kind of mingle with everybody. Like, I got my first smudging when I was, like, younger, like, I don't know, like 12 or 13, 14 or something, at a show that we were playing. And I thought that was really cool too. I guess in a sense, it's like, yeah, I am Cree, but I also like to just kind of explore every part of First Nation culture, which is,
mm-hmm.
like, yeah, I don't know.
Do you find, like, I know this is something that I think we kind of briefly talked about prior to this too, is, like, that idea of, like, being white passing and Métis, or, like, sometimes I've encountered things where I feel like and it's just, like, I think internalized, like, shame and guilt and stuff, but I feel like I don't look enough of what I should look like, so then I won't identify as, because I've had the privilege of being white passing, and, like, how mm-hmm. dare I, like, interact with this, kind of. Mm-hmm. Like, I feel like there's a bit of, like...
Definitely. Like, even, like, growing up in, like, the high school I went to and stuff, there was no First Nation people in my high school. And, like, you'd hear passing comments that were not cool.
Mm-hmm.
But it's, like... Like, how do you, like, get offended by that when you don't fit the visual role? You know what I mean? Or, like, lots of, like, workers of mine, too. There's, like, that super negative stereotype mm-hmm. of a lot of these people, right? And, yeah, it's, like, super offensive. And they don't take you seriously when you're, like, like, guys, come on.
Yeah.
Like, that's not cool at all. And they're like, oh, what do you know? You're like, you're white and this and that. And it's like, seriously?
Mm-hmm.
Like, racism is very much alive in Canada. And it's like, a really, I'll say, interesting perspective to be the target of some of that. But mm-hmm. people don't know that they're targeting you. You know what I mean? It's like yeah. being undercover almost, and you're like... So, like, yeah, in that sense, it feels like an identity has been suppressed a little bit, just because... And, like, it goes both ways, too, with, like, a lot of the First Nations mm-hmm. people that I see and I deal with. I'll try and explain to them, like, I get, like, where you're coming from, and they'll also be like, no, you're not. Okay.
Yeah.
Like, what can you do? But again, I've had lots of positive interactions too. Like I told you, like out in BC and like traveling across Manitoba with the band and in Ontario too. But I'd say like more like Winnipeg and stuff too. Mm-hmm. Just talking with people. And they're like, oh yeah, sweet. Like MAT.
Born in Louisiana, Monica Garrig is a dual citizen of Métis ancestry and is now living and working out of Calgary, Alberta. As an environmental educator and communicator, we spoke as to how her identity informs her practice. Here is our conversation. So as an environmental educator, how do you feel you incorporate your Métis identity into what you do for work?
So... I think really my Métis heritage led me into the field of environmental education and communication. Whenever I was younger, or when I was young, I spent most of my time outside in Louisiana. My grandma lived in the country, and I remember just spending hours and hours outside exploring. So I think I bring my Métis heritage into my work, because of the lens that it offers of balance and holistic ecological concepts. You know, when I think about being Métis, oftentimes I think about my French ancestors, and then I think about my Indigenous roots of Cree and Ojibwe and Chippewa. And I love history. Mm-hmm. I love the environment and I love history. And I think often back to what it must have been like when those two groups met. And they started, you know, creating communities together and relationships. And in a way, I think that that really informs how I understand myself as a Métis and being in between two groups of people, you know, creating a singular independent identity when you're in between two groups. So I struggle with identity, with identifying 100% as American or 100% as a Canadian, because, you know, that's not who I am. I'm both. And I find that to be true within my Métis identity as well, is that I can understand this European perspective, but then I can also understand the Indigenous perspective. And I think that it's very special and a really interesting lens, but it's also extremely conflicting. And I think that it creates a lot of struggle within me, really. Mm-hmm. It's like definitely a struggle, because I think in our society, there's this push to know who you are, you know, to know where you stand, and you're this one thing. And I can't say that I am. And so I think that I've struggled with that a lot in my life. But then from that, I've had to really get to know myself. Mm-hmm. And I'm really thankful for that, because it provides me with an opportunity to understand myself even better and to really identify my values and understand what those are, as opposed to just saying, okay, I'm part of this group, and so whatever they say, I agree with. You know, mm-hmm. I've had to say, okay, well, what does this group mean? Or what does this identity mean? And where do I fit? And what do I agree with? And what do I not agree with? And yeah, so I think that having dual citizenship and seeing both sides, you know, the American side and the Canadian side, has really helped me inform what it means to be Métis, to have French ancestry, but also to have Indigenous ancestry. I think growing up for my mom and her family, it wasn't always celebrated. Mm-hmm. So they have their own ways of self-identifying. But as far as my relationship with my family and how I identify, I definitely feel support from everyone around me and my family. I think that they're really interested and willing to talk about our heritage. And I think it's really a special time for us because it's a way to reconnect with those roots that were, in a way, just sort of, they were always present, but they weren't necessarily the focus of who we were. And again, going back to my transition as environmental educator, you know, it all just fell into place, like, because I wanted, you know, because of who I am and how I identify as a Métis person, I knew that that was going to be a part of my environmental education practice. You know, it's a part mm-hmm. of my spirituality. It's a part of how I experience the world. But it's also, you know, when I think about being an educator, I think about the responsibility I have, you know, what the information that I'm sharing with students is my opportunity to pass on my knowledge. And so as an environmental educator, I realized, like, that's really important to me, that this is a piece of the story that I want to tell. As an environmental educator, we talk about sustainability and we talk about being in balance and all of these things, and it always leads back to Indigenous ways of life.
A commissions coordinator for the Liberal Party of Canada, Louis Langlois' Métis roots are based in Quebec, but he grew up out of a Métis and French community around Niagara, Ontario. We spoke about having an identity that is rooted between two distinct cultures and where we draw strength and empowerment from.
I ended up meeting lots of other Métis people and lots of other First Nations people and lots of in my community where I was from, and I still got to kind of be part of that. I still got to kind of talk about my past and talk about my history. But I mean, as much as we are removed out of a place, you know, like I said, I didn't get to grow up in Val-d'Or and Sonatire and these my heritage lands, you know, I've gotten to visit them since then, but I didn't really get to be raised there. But I still kind of didn't really realize how First Nations my existence was. I mean, I grew up with a lacrosse stick. I played lacrosse all through my youth, you know, very stereotypical Aboriginal activities. I had long hair down to my bum when I was a kid, and I got made fun of by some people for it, and I got congratulated by others for it and praised by others for it. And, you know, but I mean, I was a little kid running around with hair down to my bum. I grew up going to powwows all the time. And so, you know, you get to a certain age in your teens and you start wondering about your identity more. And, you know, I was like, am I First Nations? Am I white? I don't really know, like, kind of where this is all going, where I'm coming from. And it turns out, you know, with all of these things and more, right? I mean, stuff that we'll get into today, I mean, you're kind of filling that existence the whole time. You're kind of keeping some traditions the whole time, right?
Yeah, it's interesting too, because I'm from Fort McMurray, which is a northern Albertan community, but didn't really like grow up with that, just because of like what we had talked about earlier, like family shame, and just kind of like, maybe it's because you're white passing, it's easier to just like hide that part of us. And so it wasn't until recently, and now that I'm living and working out of Calgary in Treaty 7 territory, I'm trying to like figure out who I am and what that means to be Métis, whether that's just like denotes a mixed heritage, or like whether I like, is that the like the fiddling and the jigging and the Red River, and do I go do like a pilgrimage back to Manitoba and Saskatchewan and go there and figure out who I am that way? It feels like a murky place a lot of the times, but also really like empowering.
And these things are really murky, right? I mean, I studied anthropology, social anthropology at Trent University. We learned all about identities and apartheid and diaspora and, you know, people moving around and change and mixing and families in the world. And I mean, is your family from Manitoba? Maybe if they're not, if your family's always been in Alberta, you know, that's kind of where your heritage territories are, right? I mean, that's where the love should go. And I mean, I don't know if going back to Manitoba really for either of us, you know, would really give us that much insight, you know? I that's not where my family's from, mm-hmm. and I don't really know a lot about that place in terms yeah. of in terms of my own family's history. I mean, I have nothing to gain from going there, and it's when I go up and when I go up to Sonatay, when I go up to Val d'Or in North Quebec, and that's kind of when I see people that look like me, and mm-hmm. you know, it's really neat to see, you know, people that have like similar traits as me, you know, like just like a tiny bit darker, but kind of with like traits like a First Nations person, traits like a white person, and you know, it's really neat to kind of just like all of a sudden I feel at home there. It's a strange thing.
At the end of the day, I still don't know how to properly articulate what it means to be Métis. And throughout these conversations, I don't even know if that's the right question to be asking. What I do know is that I am not alone in these feelings, and that there is a Métis community out there who feel the same way and struggle with the same questions I do. I'm honored to have interviewed these four amazing people who in their own way are making their mark in changing the narrative as to what contemporary Métis life looks like.
And like, who is Métis is a really fraught thing yeah. right now. Like, there's lots of different discussions about it, and some of that is coming from, you know, Eastern Canada, where if we think through like Métis nationalism and Lou Riel writing about this as a separate people and the people, why there's a need for treaty and land and like that negotiation, it's really rooted in like that Western Canada, the buffalo hunt, right? It's from a particular time period for sure, but
and a place
right? Absolutely tied to place.
I got to see like the whole family history, and like they go get the baptism records and stuff, and you're like, oh wow, this is actually like my great grandma was a pure Cree woman, and
mm-hmm.
like, cool. You know, so that's kind of when it started to click. And as silly as it sounds, like I got that piece of plastic that says you're First Nations. It's like,
yeah,
sweet, that's awesome.
Our stories are super important, right? Mm-hmm. I mean, the foods we eat, the stories we tell. You know, me telling you, sharing a little bit about my grandma's experience with moccasins and little black shoes. You know,
yeah.
You know, the my grandpa and his cookbook. You know, these kind of these little stories, these like little tidbits about ourselves. I think it's really important that all of us keep sharing these stories with each other, mm-hmm. with our offspring, with our cousins, our aunts and uncles, and just our friends, right? I think it's really important that, you know, coming from a culture with an oral tradition, I think it's really important that we keep telling these stories. And
yeah, and I think, you know, Olivia, I want to say thank you for doing this project, because I think it's a great opportunity to show that, you know, that there are Métis out there in various different fields,
mm-hmm.
you know, doing different things and approaching their identity through different lenses.
Thanks for joining us for this week's edition of Rendez-vous de la Francophonie, presented by La Fondation Canadienne pour le Dialogue des Cultures, the National Camps and Community Radio Association, Canadian Heritage, and The Station. To learn more about the RVF series and the National RVF Celebration, and to send us your comments, visit ncra.ca/rvf.